Welcome to the presentation of the annual results 2017 about Astaldi. Following the initial presentation, there will be the possibility of asking questions. Now I'd like to leave the floor to Engineer Filippo Spinelli, who is the CEO of Astaldi. Engineer Spinelli, you have the floor. We are going to adopt the same method we adopted while presenting the results at 9 years. In other words, there is an agenda that you can see in the first slide of the presentation, providing information about the progress of the strengthening financial and capital and financial strengthening program of our company. Later on, we are going to look at the results for 2017, after which we're going to have a number of steps, the following steps to be discussed, and the appendix, as usual. Slide number 3 here. We have a chart showing our program. Over the next, over the last few months, we have been working with the banks and advisors that we've been working with. So in the light of these meetings and negotiations, the company actually proposed a package with the 300 million euro capital increase and further actions to support the business side of our company. But let's keep in mind that the program of refinancing is confirmed in terms of yield into tranches and RCF. So the high yield and the RCF. In these 2 months, we've been working with banks and advisors. So these 2 months have been quite challenging in terms of the activity to be carried out. And we think that the progress we were able to achieve leads us to say that end of April, the board of directors will meet in order to approve this program and in order to launch the capital increase. As you can very well notice, this program is different from what we had started in the beginning, 200 million capital increase plus 200 million of other facilities. But that was a first program, a draft that had been created for the financial strengthening. This was what we had designed in the beginning. And later on, we had to explore a number of issues, also in terms of the rating of our company. So we had to focus on improving the rating of our company and to make it steady. So we had to steer towards a more clear-cut program concerning our capital. And this is why we focused on 300 million euros and some further support facilities. This program for our company entails a number of further actions that will help our company from the business side. Certainly, we are going through the final stage of negotiation. There will be further meetings. And we believe that by the end of April, this program will be officially launched. And another piece of information, which is quite important. During one of the latest conference calls, you asked me whether the company is planning to submit a strategic plan. The answer is yes. With the approval of the program, we are going to submit a strategic plan at the end of April concerning 2018-2021, because it will include the program also. Now I would like to move on to the analysis that we find at page 5. So it is slide number 5, where we see the main highlights of the 2017 results. As I said, we have been working on the geographic de-risking and on the trade drive. We can say that based on the results, we, our management has been working quite correctly on these two issues. So the We have 3.7 billion euros booked in terms of new orders. And in the next slide, you will see this is referred to low-risk countries and sectors. The book-to-bill ratio is at 1.3, so it is a substantial result, a positively important result. So in the framework of this increase, we can see the diversification of the business that we implemented in terms of operation and maintenance. The backlog of this business unit amounts to 700 million euros. Indeed, 3.7 billion euros new orders booked in 2017, we do not include in that amount the 434 million euros that were booked in 2018, in the early months of 2018. In one of the next slides, we're going to deal with the impairment test that we did in terms of the write-down in Venezuela, confirming the validity of the impairment of Venezuelan receivables. Another important element in 2017, we can see that we have a revenue of around 3.1 billion euros, that is plus 2% year on year. Actually, we thought we could achieve something better, but there was an impact due to the foreign exchange, US dollar, euros for specific orders, that but it doesn't impact on the margins, but we were not able to achieve the goal of 3,150,000,000, but we are quite close to that target. So it's quite a positive result, even though there was this negative effect we had to absorb because of the U.S. dollar euro foreign exchange rate. EBITDA margins at 12%. We were already aware that this value would be lower than the previous year, but it was in our forecasts. There was a trend reversal in terms of net working capital, and we're going to look at this in the next few slides, which leads us to say that we were able to work satisfactorily in the last quarter. As to the asset disposal, we are going to focus on asset disposal to look at the progress we were able to make in this regard. And then, if we move on to slide six, here, we have highlighted the new orders inflows for financial year 2017, amounting to 3.7 billion euros in terms of geographic de-risking. As you may very well see, most of such acquisitions, by 86% of such acquisitions, 86% of those acquisitions are mainly found in low-risk markets. Acquisitions account for more than 60% in terms of EPC contracts. So the company is delivering in terms of the three main elements that were part of our strategic plan. So one of the elements was sustainable growth and de-risking. Book-to-bill ratio is equal to 1.3, which proves this year as well our ability to generate portfolio, which is one of the main elements showing the solid trends of our company. New orders refer to Americas, Chile, we acquired two hospitals. In Italy, we have the Naples-Bari line and the consolidation of GESA, the operation and maintenance for the hospitals in Tuscany. In Europe, three railway lots. In Sweden, the Haga station, and the new highway and railway sections, both in Poland and Turkey. So in line with strategies, we can confirm this drive towards EPC contracts in low to medium risk countries. Moving on to slide seven. Here we can look at the backlog for 2017, 17.5 billion euros, which do not include the orders that were acquired or contracts of the early months of 2018. So overall, we have today €18 billion. Actually, this slide shows €17.5 billion of our backlog at 2017, non-including concessions by €4.9 billion, operation and maintenance €2.4 billion, and the works in Venezuela €900 million. Considering also new works for 2018, we have an overall backlog of around €10 billion. On the right-hand side of the slide, you can see the breakdown of this backlog in the different areas, and we can see clearly in this slide how this can mainly be found in the low to medium risk areas. Slide eight shows the results of our impairment test in terms of the write-down done in Venezuela, and this confirms the results of our activity. There are three railway projects which are underway in that country. Since 2015, our activities have been standing still. Everybody knows what happened in Venezuela. Since August 2017 to the end of year, that is until the default, I'd like to remind you that at 9 months, we reported the impairment by €230 million that we confirm again. Writing down does not mean that we drop the possibility of recovering such receivables. And I want to specify this because every time we keep discussing the same issues. As to our receivables, we focus on and we plan to recover all our receivables, also because there is an intergovernmental agreement between Italy and Venezuela. So we have this facility, as I said, of international arbitration we can resort to. And let's go back to the main items for 2017. This is slide number nine. So we were talking about revenues, €3.5 billion revenues, the result of an important business impulse in terms of Italy, Poland, Canada, and Chile. And this was also the contribution, as we anticipated, substantial contribution thanks to operation and maintenance, €360 million. And I would like to repeat, there was also an impact due to the foreign exchange rate. So for specific orders, we're not able to achieve the goal we had pursued for that period, but we were able to complete important projects in Turkey, Algeria, Peru, and Italy. EBITDA margin is at 12%, showing the solidity of our backlog. Another important element that is part of our policy is cost cutting. So even though on one hand we see the increase in the production generation of revenues, we were able to contain costs in percentage and as a proportion of the turnover. So this is an important activity that was carried out by the management. And now slide number 10 shows in detail the outcome of the impairment in Venezuela in terms of the EBIT. We start from an EBITDA of €360 million. And if we introduce the depreciation, before the impairment, we would be at 306 million euros. That is perfectly in line with expectations. This data shows the solidity of our backlog. So the business side keeps delivering on the goals that had been set. We add the effect of the impairment of the receivables in Venezuela. So from 360, we go to 306, and all the other activities that are connected to the financial charges. So the result was minus 116. But if you look at the tables in the balance sheet, without the Venezuelan effect, we would have had a net result, positive result, around 100, 105 million euros, showing that without the write-down in Venezuela, we would achieve the results that we had set. In slide number 11, we focus on the net working capital improvement that we were able to obtain in December 2017 as compared to what we had recorded in September 2017. So besides the effect of the Venezuelan impairment, you can see that starting from September 2017 to December 2017, there was a substantial reduction by 100 million. So there was a good trend in the project cash flows, especially in USA, Canada, and Italy, but also the effect of cash-ins in Romania, Sweden, and Georgia. As to the slow-moving items, we would like to point out that we cashed in some slow-moving items in Italy. We have not yet cashed in the items that I had stressed last time concerning Algeria and Romania. Otherwise, we would have had a net improvement, but we have kept working on that, and we're quite confident we're going to achieve some positive effects in the next quarters. We also have the effect of the motorway extension fee for the third bridge. We would like to remind that such fees that are linked to the third bridge, this is work that was done already, but the payment can be obtained over time. That investment was made in agreement with the majority shareholder as to the third bridge to avoid further equity contributions.
In slide number 12, we highlighted the evolution since December 2016. So from December 2016 to December 2017, net financial position with all the items. We started with the net financial position at 1,089,000,000. Then we had EBITDA and all the items that you can read here in the slide, because they have been broken down to show you the evolution in all the details. And at December 2017, we have 1,264,000,000. Of course, in September 2017, we had more. We have, in fact, 125 million euros less. So the more, therefore, there is a sort of progression that has been made also after this point. Now, if we look at slide 13, we have asset disposal. A first piece of information is the following. You can see the progress for the disposal process for the third Bosphorus Bridge, which is going to happen around June, at the end of the second term. We had the first non-binding offers that were received, and we launched the final phase at the beginning of March. And by the end of April, we should have binding offers. We are quite confident. We are delivering according to the program that we had planned together, and by the end of the first semester, we deem time has come to start disposing. The cash-in for this type of asset is around 182 plus 162 million. So it means a lot of money in terms of debt reduction and also debt cost reduction. And this applies also to the money after capital strengthening. Then we have the hospital in Mestre, the SFP. The process is ongoing. We agreed with other shareholders about operation and maintenance model, and the disposal will occur at the end of summer 2018. Now, what is new is the Gebi Orangazi Smir motorway. That is to say, the disposal of this motorway, 350 kilometers of highway that we are constructing in Turkey. I would like to shortly focus on this project. I would like to remind you that the motorway was, so the first two phases were already started and became operational. We're proceeding with the third phase. Sale plan for 2019 at the end of the construction phase is what we expected. I would like to remind you that this is another important and fundamental asset in order to reduce our debt, because we expect a positive result from this disposal process. We already started, we had already refinancing for this, and we really are quite confident to get positive results. What is new about this process is that we started the preliminary disposal process in advance, in full agreement with the Turkish partners. Slide 14 shows you a snapshot of liquidity as of December 2017. That shows the committed lines for the revolving fund. 120 is the new backup facility that we discussed also in the other conference call, signed as of December 2017, and we have the RCF. So this is a snapshot as of December 2017, and then if you need any clarification, we are here. What are the next steps? Very important is what we call maneuver approval. Within April 2018, the dismissal of the third bridge on Bosphorus by the summer 2017, and VSFB sale by the end of summer 2018. And then in appendix you have all the details that I give you for later reference. I'm done with the first part of the presentation. At this point, I would like to give the floor to you for questions and comments. Just to proceed in a very orderly manner, it would be appropriate, as I always say, that you ask two questions, not more. This is the operator. We start the QA session. Anyone who wants to ask a question has to push asterisk followed by one on their phone. To get out of the waiting list, push asterisk followed by two. In order to have your question translated, please use the mic. Speak slowly, loud and clear. Two questions, not more, please. So, hashtag, and then one. First question, Giuseppe Mattelli. Well, I actually have two questions. The first is capital increase. I wanted to know whether there is a guarantee, bank guarantee, and if the family has already committed as to the capital share for the increase, and then concessions. Can you update about capital employed for concessions and the breakdown between shareholders, loans, equity, etc. So, as to the first question, that is second question, concession, Dr. Caucci will answer. As to the financial and capital strengthening program, it's clear that we made it official, and it's based on all the negotiations that were carried out during this month with the advisors and with the banks. We still are fine-tuning the process, and so today we have not yet defined a pre-underwriting, but we hope we're pretty confident we will have it in the coming weeks. As to shareholders, I am the CEO of the company, and I cannot commit myself for the shareholder. But as of today, I have no evidence that shows that the majority shareholder doesn't follow with the capital increase. But let's see what has been discussed previously. It's clear that we are working with the banks, and we're also informing the majority shareholder about all this program, and I have no news, so I hope that with this I've answered your question. Thank you. Good afternoon. As to investments under concession, as of December 31st, we have the shares for 300 shareholder owns for 250 million, shares for 340 million, and then we have the financial credit FRIC 12 that are linked to IFLIC 12, 130 million. The total capital invested is 780 million, and there are other credit lines to make up this total, apart from the different lines of credit that I already mentioned. Okay, just a follow-up. So the 780 million are quite stable. Can you give us an update about Edilift? Because I think there was a capital commitment for the hospital. Yes, it's quite stable because then there is a negative downturn for the assets that are going to be disposed of. In 2017, we started disposing of our Metro 5 share in Milan, Shakaya's plant, the first part of Shenik Bulda's hospital in Chile, and in December, the first closing of the hospitals in Tuscany. And we continued investments where we have planned investments in Etrik Hospital in Turkey, as we mentioned before. but also the Santiago Airport and the Line 4 of the underground of Milan. And you know that we are progressing quite quickly in Milan. Thank you. Next question, Andrea Valloni, Mediobanca. Hi, everyone. The first question is about this financial strengthening program. In November, we have been speaking about 200 million plus other 200 million of operation with other facilities that had not been defined. Today, we speak of 300 million of capital increase. The fact that you no longer speak about using other facilities makes us think that you stop with 300 million, which means 300 million less than what we expected in November, or there might be further adjustment as expected in November. This is the first question. Second question, as to the new IFRS 15, so no indication for 2018. This comes with a business plan. But what would have been the margin in 2017 if you had applied this principle? Thank you. As to the first question, I hoped I had given you enough information during my first presentation. What happened in November, which was the starting point for the whole process of capital and financial strengthening. So yes, we expect 200 million of capital increase plus further 200 million of financial facilities. Then later on during the negotiations, we had considered also how we could somehow stabilize and improve the rating of the company, because the other financial facilities were pretty financial and not really capital and financial strengthening instruments. Therefore, we preferred to have a more net and capital financial strengthening approach. That is why we speak of the 200 million, because we come close to the disposal of the third bridge, and therefore we're pretty confident about cash flows and debt reduction. And therefore, we define this proposal after all this negotiation, discussion, etc., and better insight. It's clear that in the coming weeks we will continue to fine-tune the technicalities of the proposal, but I'm pretty confident that the company has been aware about the proposal they made, and the proposal is quite finalized. Of course, certain details and certain technicalities have to be defined with the banks in order to have the so-called guarantee consortium and the pre-underwriting, and then launch the famous maneuver. As to the new accounting principles, I would like to give the floor to Cauci.
Clearly, once we will file the balance sheet in its, we will submit the balance sheet in its complete form, you will find the details. But the impact of the new principle is between 10 and 12% of the net worth, around 50, 55 million of euros. And this effect is not final. It is just a transient effect, because this will be a result that will be recovered as projects on which such adjustments were made will be completed. As to the question, how much would be 2017 if we had used the criteria in a different manner, the effect is carried over from the previous year. So as to 2017, we would have had the same result, the positive reversal of the previous provisions. As to the Astaldi Group, we're talking about the criterion of accounting of cost of bids.
So as you can very well understand, this is an important component, a component which is quite substantial. And then the effect of breaking down sub-orders in projects, including multiple projects together. So the overall effect in this is around this size. So for 2017, the application of the principle would have been neutral. Thank you. Next question from Dario Tamburello, Generali. Good evening. Two questions. In the light of the financial results and the prospects for 2018, what is the impact on the remuneration policy? How do you think to manage your bond due in 2020, 150 million, that at this point in time it is read by the market as a bond which will not be refunded or repaid in a safe way. It has a low investment grade. So my question is what kind of impact this will have in the light of the current conditions of Astaldi. Dario, we apologize. We didn't actually hear. Can you speak more clearly and louder in the microphone so that we can hear the question? Can you hear me now? My question was, considering the financial results of 2017 and the prospect for 2018, what kind of impact will there be in terms of the remuneration policy? Second question concerned the bond of 750 million due December 2020 that the market considers as a high-risk bond with a triple C. So it is under the par. Maybe the market interprets a difficulty in terms of repayment or an extension of the maturity. I'd like to know what you think about it. Let us start from the policy linked to the remuneration of shareholders. Based on financial results of 2017, no handing out, no delivery of any dividend is foreseen. As to the policy for the 5 years, for the following 5 years, once we have launched the maneuver and redone the strategic plan, we will see the conditions at that point. If I understood your question correctly, as to the bond, I mean, everything the company is doing is being done in order to strengthen the company and in order to stabilize the rating at a better level than the current one, and to proceed according to the refinancing program for the high yield that foresees a reissuing in the first semester of 2019 in two tranches. I hope I answered your question. So the same bond will be split in two tranches for a longer maturity. It is possible that this will be the case. But once we have the approval of the maneuver at the end of April, we will present the proposal in detail, also concerning the possible extension or new maturities of the bond. As you may remember, this program was announced in the past. We said that we would issue the high yield in two
tranches. But first of all, we need to launch the program. We need to work on the rating, and in the first two quarters of 2019, we need to extend the maturity of the bond. Next question, Alessandro Tortora from Mediobanca. Good evening. Two questions. I would like to get further details as to the end of year. What is the reason why you have 100 million in terms of more in terms of expenses? Was there any specific project or specific item under behind this? Second question, which concerns working capital. I'd like to understand better if you can give us a sense or some guidance for 2018 as to the working capital. As to 2018, as I said before, the company will submit the new strategic plan at the end of April, and this will also incorporate the maneuver, the program we're talking about. At that point, we will provide guidance for that specific year. Today, it would be too early, and we are going through a stage of preparation of the new strategic plan. And as to the other question about working capital and the debt at end of year, I'd like to leave the floor to Mr. Cauci. We had provided some guidance in this regard, which was a bit better than the actual final data. There was an improvement as against September. It was a substantial improvement, for sure. In our forecast, we had also included two more elements, and we have been working a lot on those two elements. On one hand, we wanted to accelerate the cash-in of a couple of slow-moving items that actually shifted, so we could not consolidate the effect at end of year. And then also the divestment of the concessions of the four hospitals in Tuscany. In our forecast, we had foreseen to do this in one go. Actually, this operation will be carried out in two tranches, in two steps. One was completed already, and the next will be completed in a couple of months, since it is linked to getting the agreement of the holder of the concession. So before selling these shares, we need to get such agreement. And we're trying to speed up the process. What we can foresee, what we can anticipate is that this should be completed in 1 or 2 months at the and if this had been done by December the 31st, we would have been able to achieve the target that we had set. But I repeat, it was a transient effect that shifts to 2018. Next question.
M&G. Good evening. Actually, it's just one question. Can you clarify an answer that you already gave about the commitment of the shareholder? If I got you right, you said that you have no evidence that the majority shareholder is not going to follow with the capital increase. So my question is somehow linked to this. 3 months have passed since this program was announced. and the majority shareholders' commitment is a key pillar for its success. I was struck by your vague words. You were a little vague about this. Can you give us further details about this? I didn't think I was vague. I just gave you a snapshot of the situation, reconfirming what I said over and over again. That is to say that I have no evidence, no facts that tell me that the majority shareholder, as already said in November, is not going to follow the capital increase. So it's very important that this is of greatest importance, so much so that we are talking to the majority shareholders. I hope I was not vague. I thought I was very precise and accurate, but I just said what we already said over and over again. So the company's working with the stakeholders interested in the maneuver, and we are pretty confident about this. Progress is important. We know that we have to finalize by the end of April from both sides, and this is what we're doing. Now, saying whether I'm very confident or not very confident, we're working. We are working. So currently, there is no clear commitment on the part of the majority shareholder, is there? Well, commitment. We are still defining the maneuver with all the details. And I repeat, the majority shareholders, I have no facts, no evidence that tell me that they are not following the maneuver. What else can I say? That's that. I assume I answer the question quite accurately. Thank you. Thank you. Next question. In English, from Michael Bowen from SOA.
Hi. One piece of information that I think people are missing here is the your cash flow statement. The fact that your cash flow from operations has been negative for the last 3 years, and that is continuing to deteriorate. You burned $220 million of cash this year. Even if you do the capital raise and manage to start to sell assets, it's very unlikely that your interest cost is going to come down materially, given that people's faith in the company has been shaken. How do you see things? You know, I mean, this seems to me like a crisis for the company. How do you see yourselves coming out of that?
I will differentiate my answer. So projects that are in progress and that clearly had some advances and were continued, and it's clear that it's typical what happens with work in progress. But what the company has done and promises this inversion, this reversal, is what that we have been focusing on contract, paying attention to cash, positive cash flow coming from these jobs. And that is why we're pretty confident that there's a reversal of tide. I hope I've answered your question. If you need any further clarification, we're here.
Okay. My second question is around working capital. If I look at your payable days and indeed your receivable days, they have both increased very significantly through time. It seems that you're struggling with collections and that you're using working capital or trade payables as a means to gain additional cash for the business. There has been a point raised in the press recently that one of your Romanian suppliers is owed in excess of 200 million euros and may take you to court in order to garner that payment. Can you respond firstly to the allegation and maybe secondly, you know, how should we view working capital going forward? Because I don't see that you can continually push out your payable days.
Michael, hi, it's Alessandra. Thank you for asking the question. So if you can allow us to clarify this news, this misleading news that went around in the market over the month of March. This relates to an article in of a Romanian online newspaper dated March 5th with a subcontractor, a supplier called the Ready Mix, and the payables that Astaldi owes to the supplier amounts to 11,600 euros, which have already been settled. This news has also been then picked up again by DebtWire in a, let's say, as I say again, in a misleading way, a couple of weeks after that. Some of you that are connected to this call have already sent us a question. We've clarified on that. The 200 million euros that they are referring to is the receivables, probably. It's part of the, in Romania we have receivables, and the 200 million euros they are referring to is the balance sheet of the Romanian branch, and they reported only the liability side and not the asset side.
Okay, and then one final question, if I may. It is very difficult for investors to gain any comfort around the valuation that has been put on your assets that are up for disposal. This, to my mind at least, is a key part of saving the company. Can you please provide more information so that analysts can do their own work around trying to value these assets, as opposed to the limited information that has been provided to date? And can you also confirm that an independent business review has taken place to value those assets?
Do you refer to the assets in concession that we are having the disposal program on?
Yes.
Michael, regarding the asset disposal program, what the asset that have been sold up until now has always been with a capital gain. No, it's wrong that we had an independent business review on this concession asset to be sold. And please, if you refer to the presentation, we've given an update. This is as much as we can give out, given that we are in negotiation now, especially on the asset of the third bridge, for which we have received non-binding offers, for which we are, let's say, comfortable for the moment on the valuation. But now the second phase is starting to get to the binding offers.
Okay, thank you.
Next question in English comes from Hemat Dapke from Capital.
Hello, good evening. Just a couple of questions. On slide 11 on your working capital, you mentioned the 140 million of receivables from Turkey. I believe in November, during the third quarter presentation, there was a commentary that the company was looking to sell these receivables. Is that still the plan? If that's not the plan, because it's not mentioned in today's slides, why is that the case? So that's question number one. And then the second question is on your slide 14. I just want to make sure I'm reading your maturity schedule right. Just a question, the $541 million of uncommitted financial debt that you show in that slide, can you just confirm that that would need to be refinanced and rolled over during 2018 as well, in addition to the $282 million that you show on that slide? And also, secondly, on this slide, the $208 million of committed undrawn facilities, does that include the $120 million new line that you had put in place in November? Thank you.
As to the credit with Turkey, nothing has actually changed as compared to November last year. We didn't include this commentary. Maybe we should have, but we didn't do that. What we still have is the opportunity of valuing this in advance. We are working on that, but this is something that will be done after the maneuver, which has a priority as a task to be carried out at this point in time. Certainly, nothing has changed. The quality of receivables and the ability to get them is still the same. Good evening.
Hello.
As to the data of 541 million of uncommitted facilities, the payables that you find at slide 14, it refers to the uncommitted facility debt, which is overdraft, short-term advances. So since there is no committed maturity, we point it out as a maturity, which is usually revolving. So it is renewed by the banking system at the due course of our trade relation with them, of our business relation with them. But as to the value of the share that is not used of the committed lines, 208 million, this value includes the overall availability of the backup facility line of 120 million that we have underwritten at the beginning of December, and December 31st it was unused, so undrawn. It was still available then.
Right. And one quick question. You had announced in December that you renegotiated your December 17 covenants with your banks. Have you had any discussions for covenants for 2018 for June or December? Thank you.
We actually requested a waiver as to the covenants with reference to December 2017 and to all our banks. RCF facility, 500 million, and all the bilateral, but also the waivers. Waivers were accepted and agreed upon by the banking system. We have not asked any waivers with reference to June 2018.
Okay, thank you.
Next question, Marina Lowland, the Observatory Capital.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. I am a little bit confused with the asset disposal, specifically the bridge, in terms of the receivables that are being put up for sale. especially in light of what you were saying, you have a non-binding offer. To me, it implies that you're not actually getting paid from your JV, that, you know, because why would you be looking to sell receivables? I guess you just tried to, like, explain that to me. And then also you had mentioned in the past that you had an IRR around 12 to 16%. And is that still the case, given where the dollar-lira swap is at now compared to when you entered into the project? And the second thing, I guess, is on the cap raise. It's, you know, like you say, you have progress and it's, you know, it's around a corner, but I guess we've heard this before, and it was the same back in October. And you know, like, I understand that you had some improvement in working capital that to me looks like comes from payables, but it just seemed like time is running out a little bit, and that is worrisome. So if you could provide some color on those sort of things, that would be helpful. Thanks.
As to our asset disposal, we are referring to two items in the balance sheet, equity and shareholders' loan, which is linked to the third bridge. So what is being disposed is the equity and the shareholders' loan, overall value, $350 million, as is written in the presentation that we have presented today. As to these two items, we received non-binding offers. But as to the return of the project that you mentioned between 13 and 16% of RR, I would say the project return is slightly higher than this value you mentioned. We should remember that the project is based on the dollar, so we do not have the risk of the Turkish lira. The Turkish lira at this point in time has depreciated substantially, and our policy to carry out projects not taking the risk of the currency in countries such as Turkey was certainly a rewarding approach. And what we should point out is that by asset disposal, we mean equity and shareholders' loan. A different item is linked to the motorway extension fee, MEF. These are fees which have to be paid, and so Astaldi and the partner will receive such fee since they built an extension of the motorway, some further kilometers, and rather than being financed through equity, as the CEO pointed out, were actually funded in terms of working capital, and this working capital will be paid by the project company, the SPV, during the management, which is in the following years. All these amounts we're talking about are amounts of money that will be originated from the payment of the minimum guarantee, since the project does not have the risk of the volume of traffic, because the return of the project is based on the cash in of the guaranteed minimum.
Thank you. Can I just say something? Sorry, the reason I'm asking about the receivables is because you say that it's contingent on a contract increase. That is probably where the confusion is. I'm sorry if I didn't make myself clear. But that, to me, just implies that there are some troubles with being paid from the JV, the fact that there is actually a necessity to have a contract value increase in order to be selling these receivables. Please clarify that.
Marina, please, can you repeat? Because we didn't have
Ali.
Hi, Marina.
No, hi. Okay, so the receivables, it says that it's relating to a construction contract increase. I think that's where the confusion is for me, that in order to to sell these receivables. This seems to be a contingency on a contract increase, and that to me just sort of made me think that maybe the project in itself is not, like, maybe you're not getting paid from the JV, or maybe there's something going on, like, because I don't know, like, it just seemed a bit odd to me.
Such receivables are an increase in value that was defined between the joint venture of the construction and the SPV. This criterion to increase the value was also allowed by the lenders, the lending banks of the project. The payment mechanism is in the framework of the financial plan, and which underlies the whole project in terms of the relations with the banks and the financial plan, which underlies the disposal. So we have certainty in terms of such amount of money. If we look at the overall value of the construction contract, it went from 3 billion, it increased substantially, because there was a physical increase in terms of the kilometers of motorway that were constructed from 114 kilometers to the current 150 kilometers, generating a benefit which is quite substantial for the project company in terms of further revenues that will be obtained during the operation of the next few years.
Okay, and could you just comment on the cap raises? Just seem to have been said the same in October, and now we're sort of hearing the same. And it's, you know, we talked about the split tranche for a while, and it's not really happening. And the market certainly is not getting any easier. So please. I guess it's been asked before, but I'm asking again because it's a worry for me.
I summarize what has happened since August, because it's clear that there was a project that was carried on. We had to fine-tune and get better insight. So we constructed the maneuver, as we call it, and today we are talking with the banks, with the owners, and we are defining the maneuver. We have come to a point, and from now till the end of April, we have to do technicalities. We have to define some contractual aspects, so we are coming to the final rush. But I want to remind you that the company, after what has happened in Venezuela, but even before that, with the intention of relaunching and reinforcing the capital structure of the company in December 2017, started looking at the financial capital strengthening project. During this process, there was default with Venezuela, and in November, we defined a preliminary maneuver that you know very well, because there were some leaks. Because of these leaks, we had to communicate the preliminary projects. And as of that time, we had given the information, but the project had not been finalized. So we had 200 capital raise and 200 other financial facilities. This was as at that time. Clearly, this was a project that we were carrying on in order to finalize it with the market. Then there were these leaks, and therefore we had to make some adjustments. And then in December, we continued working December, January, February, continue working with the banks. So we got some details. We got better insight, and we understood that the first maneuver, the draft maneuver, was
Yeah, I understand that there's a big process.
In order to get a better rating.
Yeah,
and
thanks.
As of today, we have come to finalize and define, and the company has made a proposal, clear, final proposal, and we are negotiating it with the banks. We are looking at the technicalities, the contractual items in order to launch the action and the project as of the end of April. Thank you.
No, that's good. And why was it that you changed it from 400 million to 300 million? Is that a sign of improvement that you're comfortable with lower additional capital, or is it that you feel not comfortable coming to the market, to the open market, with a subordinate debt or bond? Sorry, I completely overstayed my welcome on the questions there, but a lot of questions that people are asking me to ask you. So, yeah. It would be great if you could answer.
Marina, basically, it's two reasons why, from the first idea of transaction, we have landed on only a capital increase of 300 million euros. First of all, because it's better in terms of prospective rating. Second of all, together with the banks, they themselves realized that issuing a capital increase and a convertible or a mandatory convertible wouldn't work in the market. Basically, these are the two reasons.
Got it. Thanks a lot, Ali.
Next question, Guillaume Santé, Goldman Sachs.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. I had a question with regards to the guidance you gave in late November on net debt for 2017. I think it was 1.15 billion euros, and today you're reporting close to 1.5 billion. Just wondering, what is the what changed in terms of the conditions that caused you to miss guidance, both on this and on the revenue front as well.
Guillaume, sorry, just to repeat, you're asking to compare guidance and then actual on net debt and on revenues, is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
As probably my colleague Caucci was saying before, on what pertains to the net debt, we had at that time factored in some improvement also linked to the cash-in of some slow-moving items which have not come in and therefore are being postponed in 2018. Part of it, the Italian portion, has been cashed in, but the rest has not. And second of all, the sale of one of our assets, that is the Four Hospital in Tuscany, which we had forecast to be able to complete all at once within December, whether we had to split it in two, because to enable to close, to have the final closing, we need the agreement of the client in terms to transfer the shares. And in Italy, it takes some time, so we are now in the process of waiting from the client to grant their okay on the transfer of the shares.
Okay, and collection front, you should have missed the networking capital guidance as well. Then no, I guess that's why I don't understand.
Can you repeat?
Because you gave guidance of net working capital being 600 million euros for end of 2017, and right now you're at 550, so you did better. That's why I didn't understand that, you know, it could have been a collection issue that would cause you to miss the guidance on net debt.
Part is, as I told you, yes, the guidance has been met on net working capital, but on the total of net debt, which is affected also by the sale of the asset, we didn't meet the guidance. So this is why the difference.
Okay, so you were talking about 700 million euros in proceeds from the asset sale?
parties is also a collection on not only the slow moving. We had expected about. Sorry, Dean. Some of, they're explaining me, they're helping me. So some of the collect of the receivables that we were expecting were in the fixed assets instead of in the working capital. So this is why it doesn't show in the working capital.
Okay, makes sense. And then just to build up on Marina's question earlier, so the receivables from the extension on the third bridge, if I understand correctly, basically you're getting paid through an extension of the concession life rather than full cash. Is that correct?
I'll try to answer, then my colleague from concession might correct me so I can help also with the previous question from Marina. These receivables, which, as my colleague was explaining, were agreed to be cashed in on the concession revenues, and therefore they had a cash-in for the extra kilometers that were constructed, have a payment schedule which covers 5-6 years. So this is what we have as of today. When we had talked, when was it, in November, if I remember well, of wanting to sell this receivable, was to bring forward the collection of these payments. As of today, okay, this construction of extra kilometers is almost finished, and this is why you've seen that this amount of receivable has not changed much from September to December, and we don't anticipate much change going forward.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you, Alessandro.
Thank you.
Next question. Oleg Konev from Iron Shield Capital.
Hi. So my first question is about your cash conversion from EBITDA into operating cash flow. It seems that the poor cash conversion is to a large extent related to a line called amount due from customers, or what you also call contract work in progress. Could you help me understand why this line is consuming so much cash, and what is the difference between amounts due from customers and actual trade receivables? Because if I look at the trade receivables, it seems that you're actually getting paid on time, and it is the line item amounts due from customers that are not being paid. And I've heard, and there's some speculation in the market that the accounting standard recognition for amounts due from customers, it's more lax, it's much more subjective. So is that correct? In a sense that the actual trade receivables, the client has to sign off on the work done, whereas amounts due from customers, the revenue recognized there, it's more subjective in a sense that, you know, you can take a view that the work has been performed, whereas the client has not necessarily accepted it. And as part of that question, the slow-moving items, working capital items that you're talking about, are these receivables or is this work in progress?
Give me 1 minute, please. Okay, let me see if I can answer. So trade receivables, as you said, are receivables which have already been recognized by the customers and invoiced, whereas, as you're saying, amount due from customers is work in progress. So this is the difference between the two, of course. In the slow-moving items, part of it are receivables and part of it are in the work in progress. The Romanian part is in the receivables, as I was saying before to the other question, whereas whereas the Algerian part is still in the work in progress.
Yes, but it seems that, you know, when you have a very long-term contract, several years or so, the difference between trade receivables that the client has recognized, I mean, this is still technically work in progress, right, because you're still working on a contract. It's just the client has signed off on the work done, whereas amounts due from customers seems something that is sort of, you can basically recognize revenue without actually getting paid for it, because trade receivables seem to be being paid on time. It's really the delta, the difference between the EBITDA and operating cash flow seems to a large extent relate to this item. Could you just maybe help me understand what am I missing?
Clearly, if the work in progress is invoiced, it becomes a current item and it is paid within the terms of the contract, 60 days or 90 days, according to the client. So that is an item which moves very fast. But since in the financial situation we have a certain amount of work in progress that is so substantial, this is linked to the fact that we have contracts which have a specific size. And this is impacted by the invoicing of different milestones, the criteria used. Usually they are piled up as works in a period of time which is quite long, and then they are invoiced when a milestone is actually reached, which means that the average value of work in progress is quite substantial. But what we would like to point out is that the definition of the value in work in progress is exactly the value attributed according to the prices of the contract for the units of work that have been performed. So it is not a subjective assessment made by the company. Actually, this appreciation, this value is assigned with reference to the criteria of the contract. So as to this work in progress, there can also be items which are linked to differences, variations that are applied in the project. And usually there is a settlement with the client during the life of the project. So we do not have a component of assessment which is so relevant or substantial as to this item. Criteria, I repeat, criteria are the same criteria for attributing value that are used for receivables, for credits. But from the technical standpoint, the work is done. It is then registered as work in progress, and once it develops the characteristics to be invoiced, it is reclassified in the receivables, and it is then cashed in according to the average time that is provided for in the contract.
Is there a reason why days of work in progress or work in progress as percentage of revenue have been increasing? Because I understand the revenue are growing, so it's fair for the work in progress to increase, but as a percentage of revenue, it has still been increasing. Is it because of complexity of the projects? You're doing more complex projects over the years, or you?
It is correct. The complexity of the project and the size of the project have an impact on determining the work in progress, which is higher than projects with a small to medium size. But there are special cases, such as the one we mentioned earlier on, the module extension fee, 140 million. That motorway extension fee is work in progress that is invoiced year on year according to its maturity. So year on year, it moves to the account receivables for its share, and it is cashed in according to the time provided for in the contract. Usually, the average time is 60 to 90 days. So So we are working importantly, substantially, in order to redirect our backlog towards projects showing financial characteristics that are less invasive and they are less difficult for us. We're trying to build up advances and milestones that are more extended over time so that we can lower this stock of work in progress that, because of contracts which have been acquired according to a logic that was not very efficient, the current stock, which is quite substantial. But we have a task force that was set up in order to make this item of the balance sheet more efficient, because it is quite important in terms of cash absorption.
Okay, that's understood. And I guess my second question, it's about your cash and balance sheet. And I understand for construction companies, it is quite common to provide cash collateral for bonding lines and bank guarantees. So I was just wondering, out of the cash that you have there, sort of how much of it is used as cash collateral for the banks?
Good evening. Actually, in our case, in our backlog, we do not have to date any recourse to cash collateral to guarantee and to back up our bonding. There are a couple of situations where, especially in the US, sureties can ask if the project is especially substantial, as was the case during 2017 for some projects, they can request a backup according to through LOC, a letter of credit that is provided by a bank in the form of a counter guarantee. It's not a cash collateral, though. I don't know whether I answered your question exhaustively.
Yes, I think so. And maybe one last one as a yes or no question. So the non-binding bids you received for the third bridge over Bosphorus, are these I guess you can't disclose the level as such, but roughly is it above or below the net book value of the shareholder loan and equity that you have on your balance sheet?
We received a number of offers. Clearly, we started stage two, which is the final stage, to request the binding offers. We have a range of values based on which we can move on to stage two, and we need to try and finalize. More than this, at this time of negotiation, it would not be advisable to disclose, but we are moving on to stage two and we are determined to do this.
Okay, thank you.
Grazie.
Next question, Callum Emsley, Bank of America.
Hi, good evening. Just on the receivables, I was wondering, you've mentioned that with the Turkish receivables, you don't expect to progress in collection of them beyond until about April or after. I was wondering if you could give us a bit of background on Romania and Algeria as well, and perhaps tell us exactly what is, because I understand you have a judgment in your favor on the Romanian receivables. Can you give us a timeline when you expect to get those, and perhaps the same for Algeria as well, please?
Well, as to Algeria and Romania, we have judgment levels that are in our favor. The procedure is not finalized yet. For Romania, you have seen politically there are different situations. government that are continuously reshuffled, and therefore it is very difficult to close the negotiation. We are in a final phase for both the situations and for what concerns the administrative procedure. So the administrative procedure should be concluded in order to have a timeline and the amount to be cashed in. But if you're interested in the intermediate phases, well, this is what we have reported in our report and is in line with our expectations. But the administrative procedure was slowed down because of the reason I just explained.
Okay, thank you.
Next question, Louis Peters, J.P. Morgan's.
Hi there, thanks for the call. My first question is what non-recourse factoring, letters of credit, and reverse factoring you have outstanding at year end?
Louis, please, can you repeat? We didn't get it at all.
I was just asking what non-recourse factoring, letters of credit, and reverse factoring balance you have at the end of the year.
The stock of recourse factoring as of December 31st, 2071 is 250 million. As to the program, this value is a value that is going to be reduced versus our average outstanding also in the previous years. As to reverse factoring, 250 million is non-recourse factoring. Now, as to the reverse factoring program, for us, this is a program that is supporting our suppliers mainly. And we guarantee the support to our suppliers who want to discount their payables to us. They notified and we look at each payable and we accept or not accept it. We know that the average value of credit is of this amount is about 95 million.
Okay, thanks for that. Second question is just, have you seen any pressure on your working capital or any reduced access to surety lines and project tenders since you were downgraded to CCC?
Just to make sure you're asking us, since the down rating, if we have seen some pressure on working capital and on what?
On your access to surety lines and
on
project tenders.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, let's say that we have an agreed amount of guarantees, also with sureties, which is quite important and consistent. We always had a very positive amount considering the performance that the group achieved. The works carried out by our group were always delivered in time, on time, and within budget. This is historical data, so we had no claims, and we never had problems, major problems, with our financial counterparts. It's clear that the downgrading and the uncertainty of the general contest, uncertainty that is particularly hitting and affecting the construction sector in general, and therefore also our name, our brand, access to funding support for new projects is now more challenging, is more difficult, thanks to the report we could manage the situation in the last few months. But our program of financial and capital strengthening, reinforcing, is aiming right at this. We wanted to reestablish and reinforce the climate of mutual confidence that can really revamp our future.
Okay, thank you.
Next question, Philippe Mallard, Union Capital Group.
Yes, hello, good evening. Thank you for taking my question. If I recall well, there was an article in the press stating that you might be looking for an industrial partner on your side who might have jumped in during the capital increase and maybe take a percentage of the group Astaldi. I was just wondering whether or not it was an option that you were considering.
Well, as a spokesperson for the company, I can say that there is no negotiation underway, so this doesn't concern the company. If you refer to information about the majority shareholder, as you always ask me a question to understand how committed the majority shareholder is and what the majority shareholder is doing, perhaps I invite you to ask the question to the majority shareholder themselves, and they can answer directly. Thank you.
No, thank you. No, my question was really finding, or maybe I would say an industrial partner, like another group, maybe doing in different parts of the world the type of, I would say, the same activity as yours and maybe joining forces. So that's why just my own question, not about the majority shareholder, just finding maybe an industrial partner.
If you refer to the fact whether the company in delivering the works, say works in joint venture and signs commercial agreements, trade agreement with other leaders in the sector, well, this is what typically happens all over the world, almost in all our works, both in Italy and abroad. We work in joint venture with other general contractors, and we also have partnerships, stable partnerships in certain areas, like in Turkey and in Italy, for some railroad tracks and for with other general contractors that are leaders like Astaldi. So if you refer to this, we work with the system of joint venture.
But, okay, thank you.
We are just doing what everyone does, and in de-risk. de-risking. I spoke about de-risking, and in my presentation, I spoke about de-risking or risk containment. And in order to reduce the risk level, we prefer to work with local partners in joint venture abroad. This is a policy of the company. I hope I answer your question.
We're going to take the last question, please.
Next question, Heyman Dapke, Fundus Capital.
Hello, just a couple of follow-up questions on some of the other questions. I believe in response to one of the questions on net debt guidance, you mentioned that you're expecting some disposals of fixed assets. Could you just give some more detail on that? I wasn't aware of what exactly that was. And secondly, on the Bosphorus Bridge, I think in November, you mentioned that you would be selling only the shareholder loan. Can you confirm that you're now looking to sell the shareholder loan plus your equity stake? Thank you.
Hi, Amant. For the sale, for the third bridge, we confirm, as we said, you can also see on page of the slide, that we are proceeding to sell both the shareholder loan, which amounts to 100 million euros, and the equity portion, which amounts to 167 million euros. Yes, you're right, this is a step up from our original plan, because at the time when we have first thought of selling the asset, we thought that the shareholder loan would have been an easier or more feasible instrument to sell. But now, together with our shareholder, because we are negotiating together with them for the sale of a stake of the asset, for our part, I can confirm that it's the shareholder loan portion plus the equity part. When I said shareholder, I meant with our partner. We are negotiating to the sale of the stake of the asset.
Right. And on the net debt guidance, what fixed assets were you expecting to realize during the fourth quarter that did not come through?
As we have during the year closed and completed a lot of works, we have the, envisaged to sell some of the equipment which are in the, I could say, classified in this fixed asset. We had envisaged to sell some of those within the in the fourth quarter, within the end of the year, and this is something that we're doing now in 2018.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for participating to our conference call. I hope this has been useful to you. And if anything, anyone has been left out, we're sorry, but you can send us an email or send me an email for any further question you might want to ask. Thank you very much. Have a good night.